Once again, we're going to mention the fact that most all the world's banks are controlled by Jews. But what do most people really understand about the Jewish people and even the word Jew? Following are some facts you may or may not know. According to Benjamin Friedman, a Jew who converted to the Christian religion, in the time of Bible history, there was a geographic area known as Judea. Judea was a province of the Roman Empire. A person who lived in Judea was known as a Judean, and in Latin as a Judaeus, and in Greek it was Judaeus. Those are the two words in Greek and Latin for a Judean. In Latin and Greek, there is no such letter as J, and the first syllable of Judaeus or Judaeus starts with G-H-U. When the Bible was written, it was first written in Latin, Panantic, Syriac, or Aramaic, in all those languages. Never was the word Jew in any of them because the word didn't exist. Judea was the country and the people were Judeans, and Jesus was referred to only as a Judean. That's how they were referred to in the earliest scripts available. In 1345, a man by the name of Wycliffe in England thought that it was time to translate the Bible into English. There was no English edition of the Bible because no one could read. It was only the educated church people who could read Latin and Greek, Syriac, Aramaic, and the other languages. However, Wycliffe translated the Bible into English, but in it he had to look around for some words for Judaeus and Judaeus. There was no English word because Judea was passed out of existence. People had long ago forgotten that. So in the first translation, he used the word in referring to Jesus as G-Y-U. At the time, there was no printing press. Then, between 1345 and the 17th century, when the press came into use, that word passed through many changes. The word G-Y-U, which was in the Wycliffe Bible, became G-I-U. Then IU. That's because the I in Latin was pronounced like the J. Julius Caesar is IUL because there is no J in Latin. So the spelling changed to IUW, then IEUU, then IEUI, then IWE, then IOW, then IEWE. These were all in Bibles as time went on. Then I-E-U-E, then I-U-E, then I-V-E, and then I-V-W, and finally, in the 18th century, Jew. All the corrupt and contracted forms of Judaeus and Judaeus in Latin. There was no such word as Jew. There was only Judea, and Jesus was a Judean. And the first English use of the word in an English Bible to describe him was G-Y-U, Jew, a contracted and shortened form of Judaeus, just the same as we call a laboratory a lab and gasoline as gas. It was a tendency to shorten it up. In England, there were no public schools. People didn't know how to read. It looked like a scrambled alphabet, so they made a short word out of it. Now, for the theologian to say that you can't harm Jews is just ridiculous. I'd like to know where in the scriptures it says that. I'd just like to know the text. Judaism was a name given in recent years to this religion known in Bible history as Torah. No Jew or no educated person ever heard of Judaism. It didn't exist. They pulled it out of the hat, a meaningless word, just like anti-Semitic. The Arab is a Semite, and the Christians talk about people who don't like Jews as anti-Semites, and they call all the Arabs anti-Semites. But the only Semites in the world are Arabs. Most Jews are not a Semite unless they converted to Judaism. They are all Turkothean Mongoloids, the Eastern European Jews. So they brainwash the public. Most people presume that all the Jews are loyal to each other, and that's wrong, because the Eastern European Jews outnumber all the rest by so many that they create the impression that they are the Jewish race, that they are the Jewish nation, that they are the Jewish people, and the Christians swallow it like an ice cream cone. But in 1844, the German rabbis called a conference of rabbis from all over the world for the purpose of abolishing the Kol Nidre from the Day of Atonement religious ceremony. Kol Nidre asked that all vows be nullified. In Brunswick, Germany, where the conference was held in 1844, there was almost a terrific riot, a civil war. The Eastern Europeans ask, we should give up Kol Nidre? That gives us our grip on our people. We give them a franchise so they can tell the Christians, we'll make any deal you want, but we don't have to carry it out. So they're not so united. Are the Christians united? So the same disunity is among the Jews. When the Zionist Jews went to France to try to get the French government to back that Zionist venture, there was only one Jew in France who was for it. That was Rothschild, and they did it because they were interested in the oil and the Suez Canal. And the Jews sell bonds for Israel. They tell people it's for humanitarian purposes, and they send maybe $8 billion to Israel, tax-exempt, tax-deductible. So if they hadn't sent that $8 billion to Israel, $7 billion of it would have gone into the U.S. Treasury as income tax. So what happened? That $7 billion deficit, that air pocket, the gullible Christians have to make up. They put a bigger tax on bread or corporation tax or gasoline or something else. Somebody has to pay the housekeeping expenses for the government. So why do we let people send their money over there to buy guns to drive people out of their ancient homeland? And we say, oh well, the poor Jews. They have no place to go and they've been persecuted all their lives. They've never been persecuted for their religion. Do you know why the Jews were driven out of England? Because King Edward I in 1285 drove them out, and they never came back until the Cromwell Revolution, which was financed by the Rothschilds. So, for 400 years, there wasn't a Jew in England. Why were they driven out? Because in the Christian faith and the Muslim faith, it's a sin to charge rent for the use of money. In other words, what we call interest is a sin. So the Jews had a monopoly in England, and they charged so much interest, and when the lords and dukes couldn't pay, the Jews foreclosed. And they were creating so much trouble that the King of England finally made himself their partner, because when they came to foreclose, and some of those dupes bumped off the Jews, the money lenders. And when the king found out what the trouble was all about and how much money they were making, he declared himself a 50% partner of the money lenders. That was Edward I, and for many years, one-third of the revenues of the British Treasury came from the 50% interest in money lending by the Jews. But it got worse and worse, so much worse, that when the lords and dukes kept killing the money lenders, the king said, I declare myself the heir of all the money lenders. If they're killed, you have to pay me because I'm their sole heir. That made so much trouble because the king had to go out and collect the money with an army, so he told the Jews to get out. There were 15,000 of them, and they had to get out, and they went across to Ireland, and that's how Ireland got to be part of the United Kingdom. When King Edward found out what they were doing, he decided to take Ireland for himself before someone else did. He sent Robert Southgard with a mercenary army and conquered Ireland. So, show me where any Jew was persecuted in any country because of his religion. It never happened. It's always their impact on the political, social, or economic customs and traditions of the community in which they settled. When Russia was formed in 920 and gradually surrounded the Khazar kingdom and absorbed them, most of the well-to-do Khazars fled to Western Europe and brought with them the customs, the habits, the instincts with which they were endowed. The very things to which we, as Christians, object to. When the Christians first heard that these people were fleeing from Russia and who they were, that they had practiced this Talmudic faith, the Christians in Western Europe said, "Oh, they must be the remnants of the lost 10 tribes." And Mr. Grutz, the greatest historian among the Jews, said that, and he's probably as good an authority on that subject as there is. So when Ben Franklin came to Europe in the 18th century, he already saw the results of what these people had done after they left their homeland. When they have money, they become tyrants. And when they become defeated, they become ruthless. They're nothing but barbarians. They're the descendants of Asiatic Mongols, and they will do anything to accomplish their purpose. What right did they have to take over Russia the way they did? The Tsar had abdicated 9 or 10 months before that. Russia was going to have a constitutional monarchy, but they didn't want that. When the constitutional monarchy went to assemble in November, the Jews mowed them all down and established the Soviet Union. There was no need for that. But they thought, now is the time. And if you will look in the Encyclopedia Britannica under the word Bolshevism, you'll find the 5 laws there that Lenin put down for a successful revolution. One of them is, quote, "Wait for the right time and then give them everything you've got." It would pay you to read that. You'd also find that Mr. Harold Blacktree, who wrote the articles for the Encyclopedia Britannica, states that the Jews conceived and created and cultivated the communist movement, and that their energy made them the spearhead of the movement. Harold Blacktree wrote it, and no one knew more about communism than he did. And the Encyclopedia Britannica for 25 years has been printing it. Well, that's the end of what Benjamin Friedman had to say about the Jewish history. But for centuries, there was no conflict in Palestine. In the 19th century, this land of Palestine was inhabited by a multicultural population, approximately 86% Muslim, 10% Christian, and 4% Jewish, and they all lived in peace. In the late 1800s, a group in Europe decided to colonize the land. This group was known as Zionists. They represented an extremist minority of the Jewish population. Their goal was to create a Jewish homeland, and they considered locations in Africa and the Americas before settling on Palestine. At first, this immigration created no problems. However, as more and more Zionists immigrated to Palestine, many with the expressed wish of taking over the land for a Jewish state, the indigenous population became increasingly alarmed. Eventually, fighting broke out with escalating waves of violence. Hitler's rise to power, combined with Zionist activities to sabotage efforts to place Jewish refugees in Western countries, led to increased Jewish immigration to Palestine, and the conflict grew. Finally, in 1947, the United Nations decided to intervene. However, rather than adhering to the principles of self-determination of peoples, in which the people themselves create their own state and their own system of government, the UN chose to revert to the medieval strategy whereby an outside power divides up other people's land. While it is widely reported that the resulting war eventually included five Arab armies, less well known is the fact that throughout this war, Zionist forces outnumbered all Arabs and Palestinian combatants combined, often by a factor of two or three. Moreover, Arab armies did not invade Israel. Virtually all battles were fought on land that was to have been the Palestinian state. Finally, it is significant to note that Arab armies entered the conflict only after Zionist forces had committed 16 massacres, including the grisly massacre of over 100 men, women, and children at Deir Yassin. Future Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin, head of one of the Jewish terrorist groups, described this as splendid and stated, "As with Deir Yassin, so everywhere we will attack and smite the enemy. God, God, thou hast chosen us for conquest." Zionist forces committed 33 other massacres altogether. By the end of the war, Israel had conquered 78% of Palestine. 750,000 Palestinians had been made refugees. Over 500 towns and villages had been obliterated, and a new map was drawn up in which every city, river, and hillock received a new Hebrew name, as all vestiges of the Palestinian culture were to be erased. For decades, Israel denied the existence of this population. Former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir once said, "There is no such thing as a Palestinian." In 1967, Israel conquered still more land. Following the Six-Day War, in which Israel forces launched a highly successful surprise attack on Egypt, Israel occupied the 22% of Palestine that had eluded them in 1948, and this was the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Since, according to international law, it is inadmissible to acquire territory by war, these are occupied territories and do not belong to Israel. It also occupied parts of Egypt, which has since been returned, and also Syria, which remain under occupation. Now, in 1948, Harry S. Truman had been pretty much abandoned by everyone when he came to run for the president. Then an American Zionist brought him $2 million in cash in a suitcase aboard his whistle-stop campaign train. And that's why our recognition of Israel was rushed through so fast. Now, since Israel has become a country, it is the only country that refuses to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and bars international inspections. It is the only country in the Mideast that has nuclear weapons. It is the only country that seizes the foreign territory of other nations by military force in defiance of UN resolutions. It is the only country that routinely violates the international borders of another sovereign state with warplanes, artillery, and naval gunfire. It is the only country that sends assassins into other countries to kill political enemies. Then it has assassinated more than 100 political officials while killing hundreds of civilians in the process, including dozens of children. It is the only country with high-ranking military officers have admitted publicly that unarmed prisoners of war were executed. It is the only country that refuses to prosecute its soldiers who have acknowledged executing prisoners of war. It is the only country that has created 76,000 refugees and refuses to allow them to return to their home, farms, and businesses. It is the only country that refuses to pay compensation to peoples whose land, bank accounts, farms, and businesses it has confiscated. It is the only country that blew up an American diplomatic facility in Egypt and attacked a U.S. ship, the USS Liberty, in international waters, killing 34 and wounding 171 Americans. It is the only country that has employed a spy, Jonathan Pollard, to steal classified documents and give them to the Soviet Union. It is the only country that first denied any official connection to Pollard and then voted to make him a citizen and continuously demands the American president to grant him a full pardon. It is the only country that allows American murderers to flee to its country to escape punishment in the United States and refuses to extradite them once these murderers are in their custody. It's the only country that preaches against hate, yet builds a shrine and a memorial for a murderer who killed 29 Palestinians while they prayed in their mosque. It is the only country that had break the bones policy where people who had been throwing stones, usually youths, were held down and their arms and legs broken. One hospital in Gaza reported 200 broken bones on the first night. It is the only country that has the second most powerful lobby in Washington. It is the only country that deliberately targeted a UN refugee camp in Oana, Lebanon, and killed 103 innocents. It is the only country that has been in defiance of over 200 Security Council resolutions and has been protected from 29 more by United States votes. It is the only country that regularly violates the Geneva Convention by imposing collective punishment on entire towns and camps for the acts of a few. It is the only country that receives more than one-third of all United States aid, yet is the 16th richest country in the world. It is the only country that receives U.S. weapons for free and then sells the technology to China, even at the objections of the United States. It is the only country that has demolished more than 4,000 innocent Palestinian homes as a means of ethnic cleansing. It is the only country that has signed the Oslo Accord promising to halt any new settlement construction, but instead has built more than 270 new settlements since they signed. What country did all these things? Israel. And what country in the Mideast is the United States attacking and threatening to attack because of fear that it may be a threat to us and our allies? Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and Iran. The Zionist own mouthpiece, the Jewish Standard, in October 1950, published the following revealing figures. Before the end of the British Mandate, Palestine's Christian population, excluding British officials, police, and army personnel, totaled 145,000 people. Of these, roughly 100,000 are estimated to have lived in the area now known as Israel. At present, Christians in Israel number between 45 and 50,000. Roman Catholics have dropped in number from 30,000 to 5,000 since 1947. Protestants from 6,000 to 1,500. It would seem that the Christian population of Israel is faring even worse than the Jews are alleged to have fared under Hitler. But where are our free press and radio and CBC? Imagine the hubbaloo that they would be making of America if America were meting out this treat to her Zionist population. And here's another extract from the tablet Brooklyn, dated October 14, 1950. It says that in a country-by-country analysis, a Vatican radio broadcast gave the following report on the persecution of priests and monks in areas behind the Iron Curtain. In the Ukraine, 5,000 priests were killed and 1,000 churches destroyed or closed. In the Baltic countries, 1,000 priests were murdered and jailed. In Poland, 1,000 priests were deported to Siberia. In Czechoslovakia, 300 priests and an undetermined number of monks and nuns were imprisoned. In Hungary, 1,000 priests and monks were murdered or deported, and another 589 prevented from carrying out their duties. In Bulgaria, 120 priests were killed or exiled. In Yugoslavia, a total of 1,954 priests were killed, arrested, or deported. In Albania, some 715 priests and monks, including all the bishops of the country, were rendered incapable of performing their ministry. It was no doubt the policy of National Socialism to eliminate the influence of Jews in Germany. In the years 1920 to 1933, less than 500,000 Jews lived in Germany, comprising about 0.075% of the German population. Yet they held 65% of all influential positions in banking, the court of justice system, healthcare, education, economy, entertainment, and media, thereby directly or indirectly ruling the country. And then there is the unquestionable Jewish origin and realization of Bolshevism communism. Starting in 1917 with the Russian Revolution, 85% of the founding fathers of Bolshevism were Jews and its tyrannical regime. Thereafter, it spilled over to Europe and in 1919 formed a short-lived Hungarian Soviet Republic under Bela Kun and the Bavarian Soviet Republic under Kurt Eisner, both of them of Jewish extraction. Well, it's time to say goodbye for today's program. Hope to have you back here for our next one. Until then, keep safe, stay happy, and may God bless.